is Friday, July 19th, 2019. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I usually talk to our capital muckraker-in-chief, Chief Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics, but Sean, the ever-elusive Sean, won't be joining me this week. Hopefully, we'll be back in. He'll be back on the air at some point in the future. Hopefully, next week. The summer is can be really tricky. This week, I've had a quite a week, which I'll get into a little there. But today's show will have a little bit more of a condensed show today. We'll talk a little bit about some of what's going on. It's a little bit more focused way. Because after all, the 2020 campaign is now in full swing as Trump and his supporters launch their new racist chant, Send Them Back. The chant targets the squad, Ilhan Omar, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, and Ayanna Pressley, the most visible newly elected progressive congresswomen, all, of course, women of color. Precisely why Trump is using them as surrogates to encourage violence and hatred against people of color and immigrants. Ilhan Omar is welcomed by constituents back at her home districts following Trump's, fascist rally. Yeah, and she pulls no punches, telling reporters that she thinks Trump is indeed fascist. The question still remains if the Democratic Party leadership has the capacity to meet Trump's rekindled fascism. My bet is that we are on our own with a growing insurgent Democratic caucus. That's right. Right now, I was watching the news, and it seems like the leadership in the House especially really wants us to just get back to talking about Mueller and maybe about calling Trump a bad man. But please don't mention the impeachment. I think Nancy Pelosi's not going to be able to control that for too much longer as that newly emergent or that growing emergent insurgent caucus is growing impatient with waiting around and letting this guy bring fascism to their shores in the United States, which is, it's been like that for a while for a lot of people. CNN announced the lineup for the second round of Democratic Party presidential debates. Yes, and Biden is spared being on the same stage with Warren once again. This time around, Bernie and Warren will share the same stage on night one, while Kamala Harris will face off with Biden on night two, which is, of course, everyone wants to see the drama. But the Washington Post reports that there may be some labor unrest within the Bernie Sanders campaign. Workers there demanding the $15 hour minimum wage that Sanders has championed. But there seems to have been at least a contingent of the campaign workers who are making us some noise that, that's not what they're getting. So we're going to see what goes on there. Ironically, of course, that the Washington Post picks up this story while they don't even touch what other campaigns are getting paid, right? So Bernie is going to have to, he's going to have to weather a different kind of storm when it comes to the controversies that the media wants to stoke when it comes to his campaign. So we'll see. Locally this week, last week was Netroots Nation in Philadelphia. I will give a read on my limited time there. Sean stayed for he was there for more of it than I was. Got some mixed feelings about it. Got to spend a lot of time with Rick Smith, which was very, very awesome. That always kind of grounds me and reminds me that my read on the world, as dystopian as it can be, is actually relatively sane. And I'm not the darkest cloud sometimes. So I actually told Rick that. So I'll tell you a little about that. And there is no bigger space news this week than this is the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 mission to the moon. On July 16th, 1969, the Saturn V rocket launched from the Kennedy Space Center in Florida, carrying Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, and Michael Collins to the moon. Armstrong and Aldrin, of course, landed on the lunar surface 50 years ago tomorrow, right? That's July 20th. And Collins remained in orbit piloting the command module. All sorts of crazy stuff I could talk about from here, but I'll save a lot of the space news from this week, and I'll just focus on the Apollo 11 mission. But I'll tell you, our galactic capitalists are really ramping up, which I'll start getting into another point. And LEGO did release their new lunar module set to commemorate the historic mission. It's really awesome. Yes, I've got one, and my kids and I will add that to our LEGO Saturn V rocket that my daughter and I built last year. This week in beer news, Free Will will be at the Bluegrass and Blueberries Festival at Peddler's Village this Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. And that, of course, will be as the heat index hits close to 110, 115 this weekend. That's insane. Welcome climate change. But anyways, that festival and Free Will being there will pair well with two new releases they got for tomorrow. There is the festival special, Blueberry Mash, and that is a sour ale brewed with 850 pounds of blueberry puree, vanilla, and milk sugar. That's 7.5 ABV. And then we also have got the Mango Mash. Mango Mash. Sour ale brewed with 850 pounds of mango puree, vanilla, and milk sugar at 7.5 ABV. That adds to their last mash, the Strawberry Mash, which I gotta tell you was unfreaking believably good. So I can't wait to pick up both of those this weekend. Don't miss that. They are available at both locations in their four packs. Want to remind everybody, tune in to Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org. You can tune in to Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. Make sure you download the Rick Smith Show daily podcast on iTunes, Podbean, or wherever you get your podcasts. Remind everybody, we need a progressive future. We want a progressive future and not the fascist one, which is kind of brewing once again. We need progressive media. You can help support Pull No Punches homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. Not ready to become a member? No problem. Just go to ragingchickenpress.org and click on the big blue donate button in the right sidebar. Best way to invest in keeping the media in the movement in the media, is to become a member for those $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress today. Well, there we have it, folks. Yeah, like I said, Sean is not here today. So those of you who are bored with the sound of my voice can kind of find another podcast right now. Sean is somewhere out there in the sweltering heat. It's been quite a time, I have to say, the past few weeks. Summer is always – we ran into this last summer too as well. Summer is always tricky when it comes to scheduling our podcasts. One, in part because a lot happens in the month of June and even into July when it comes to the budget and stuff, kind of scandals that brew out in Harrisburg. So a lot of times Sean needs to get to hearings and a bunch of things like this when we're not available. There's also vacations. Sean's birthday is coming up at the end of July. He's got vacations. I had vacations. And so we've missed yet another week of podcasts. So we're kind of like on one, off one. We've got to figure out how to do that better. You know, I got to tell you, just this is for a personal privilege moment here, folks. This is one of the things I've been so frustrated with. But, you know, just thinking a lot about the past few days is that what I could do if I could do this full time. I think it hits me about every time in the summer right now as I'm thinking, starting to looking for the fall semester and going back to work. And there's a bit of sadness I got to have. It always comes to there. It also comes when every time I go with something like Netroots Nation and I see some of the work that's going on there and talking to a lot of people that I guess we share a certain kind of frustration with the fact that, you know, most of the people that are doing this kind of work are doing it as like your second or third job. You know, you're doing it when you can fit in the time. And there's no other way to kind of deal with it other than things fall through the cracks. I mean, you know, after we've seen a bunch of stuff that's gone on. I mean, one after the Janus decision, a lot of unions basically just circled the wagons around their own members. You know, you kind of expect to a certain degree. But what that meant is that, you know, unions basically stopped supporting some of the progressive media outlets that they had been they've been supporting for a while, or at least been one of the people that have been supporting. As the presidential race kicks up, you've got the kind of professional progressives out there who are all focused on campaign mode and are really not all that interested in thinking about building media infrastructure. And, you know, I went to a couple sessions and I talked to a bunch of folks who are involved, particularly in progressive media. And one of the things that's pretty much shared is the frustration. If you look at what's going on the right, the right just dumps tons and tons of money into building kind of a media infrastructure, building an intellectual infrastructure, and it supports those, even though they know it's going to be a money-losing proposition for years. But on the left, which just strikes me as incredibly ironic, the left seems more wedded to kind of market performance than the right is, which kind of, you know, you start to see some of this when you do this work, you do this kind of progressive media work, you do a blog, you do a podcast, and when you start to talk to people about funding, one of the first things you start to hear, especially people who kind of represent kind of pockets or piles of funds, if you will, kind of the donor class on the left, which is kind of a funny thing, but it's true. One of the first things you hear almost immediately is like, well, you know, is this going to be kind of sustainable? Will it be kind of like money making, or you're asking us to kind of invest in something when we're going to have to keep on supporting it year after year? It's not going to be able to stand on its own immediately, you know, and that you take that, and it's really a market mentality. It's almost like a Wall Street mentality that a lot of the progressive left have when it comes to investing in kind of a media infrastructure or intellectual infrastructure. It's this idea that if you're going to put something in, they want a return on their investment, like in the short run. Well, as the right wing, what they decide to do is they invest for the long haul. Right, they understand kind of cultural shifts and cultural politics and long-term kind of ways of kind of shifting the discourse and moving our political and economic and cultural lives kind of to the right is going to take a long, long time. And so they invest for that long haul. And I know that people will say that, yes, the right has got more money, they can just do all this stuff. And, you know, and there's truth to that. But it's also truth that there's a lot of folks who are people like me, right? I mean, I am, a tenured faculty member at a state university. I'm a union member. I have a good contract, right? And, you know, I make a good income. Right. No, I'm not in the my income doesn't put me into the, you know, whatever, the elite of all elites. But I do have disposable income that I can choose to invest. Right. And I do. I mean, not only do I kind of spend a significant chunk of my, of my salary supporting Raging Chicken Press and keeping this show up and running and kind of everything that entails. Because, look, you know, when it comes right down to it, Raging Chicken Press is, you know, it's split between, you know, me and the members that have chosen to stay with us, right, and or to join us, rather, and to join us and continue to support us over the years. But, you know, a good chunk of it is me. And because I recognize that's important. But it doesn't stop with this. It doesn't stop with Raging Chicken. I also support In These Times. I also support Jacobin. I also support Labor Notes. I also support, you know, a range of kind of long-term investments, not simply the charity investments. Not that they're not important, right? But, I try to target my own kind of giving, if you will, toward things that are going to build an infrastructure for the future. Right. And that are, part of the necessary aspects of struggle that, don't get all the glitz and all the attention that, say, you know, a campaign for presidents get. The other thing that was frustrating, you know, talking to folks, and I guess I was going to talk about this in the second part, but, you know, I'll talk about it now, I guess. The other, you know, talking to folks at Netroots, a few people, I was only there for one day. I was on vacation when, you know, Netroots was happening. So I drove up from vacation and whatever. But, the other thing is like a frustration, especially by seasoned activists and stuff, a frustration with progressive, kind of like the formalized professional progressives, and a lot of basically just everyday, you know, progressive voters, right? Progressives out there in the world who are not necessarily activists, but we'd count as progressives. But the focus being so square on the president, right, and not on kind of local politics, right? And that has changed significantly since 2016. I got to grant that. What we saw happen in 2018 with the kind of the retake of the House, and we saw, you know, the elected most progressive folks, the squad, you know, to Congress. A lot of that that changed in that period of time where people started focusing once again on kind of local politics and organizing and stuff like that, which is great. But when you talk to the money people, right, the people that are thinking of a kind of like spending money, it's like it's remarkable to be, you know, hearing conversations. And I didn't have a direct conversation with somebody about this, but I overheard these conversations that just kind of really just reminded me of the kind of shit that we're in. Let me just give an example. So there's, you know, this one conversation where people are talking kind of what I was just talking about, this media infrastructure and things like this. And someone's being interviewed, you know, as part of another podcast, and they were talking ahead of time. And they had just had a conversation with some kind of like donor people, whatever. Right. And they were kind of saying, look, we're looking for support. And so and so they're recalling this conversation to their friend who was hosting the podcast. This was not something they aired on air, but, you know, I overheard it. But anyways, and, you know, it's like, on the one hand, you know, they said, you know, to give like, say, $5,000 to like help support a podcast or help support a media outlet. Right. Or $10,000, something like this. You know, again, for someone like me, for someone like you, I mean, that's a lot of money. But for some of these kind of donor institutions, that's not a lot of money. So, and in that same conversation, so not only did they say, well, I don't know, we got $5,000 or even $1,000 is a lot of money. I don't know if we're going to be able to swing that, blah, blah, blah. And then in the next breath, probably the next breath, that, you know, they're talking about dropping hundreds of thousands of dollars for political candidates at the presidential level, right? Or a TV ad, right? Which can run in the several hundred thousand dollars, or not millions of dollars. So, you know, this happened with, you know, again, I would say within my own union, my own organization is like, you know, I remember the time when they invested in helping support, you know, putting out a media campaign, buying TV spots and things like this. And it was not cheap. And yet at the same time, when there's people looking for kind of support at the grassroots level, the kind of, you know, the wallet is kind of held a little closer to the chest, so to speak, or in the pocket. So, I mean, it's that kind of stuff. And that gets extraordinarily frustrating because, I mean, I don't know about you, but I wouldn't be where I am today if it wasn't for progressive or alternative media. It's like a lifeline for kind of progressive. It's a lifeline for social movements. It's a lifeline for building social change, you know, and to know that it's such an uphill battle to get people who should be seeing this and should be investing in this kind of stuff. It's my little hobby horse. And I just had to kind of get that out of the way because it was, you know, one of the things that just it gets frustrating after a while. But I think about kind of what's happened this past week alone on the national stage and even locally, but on the national stage, it's like, you know, imagine if we had a team of people that could just cover this stuff all the time. Imagine if, like, you know, I didn't have to squeeze, you know, an hour or two, right, at, you know, 10, 11 o'clock at night to try to kind of catch up on work that I missed because I was on vacation. But if I could actually do this as a full-time position, I mean, you know, things like this. And not just me. And this was consistently, you know, with talking to other folks, too, as well. So it was interesting. But anyways, this week, you know, marked mostly by the kind of what I consider is the official launch of the Trump campaign, I got so frustrated also listening to Rachel Maddow this week, last night in particular, when you're kind of talking about that send them back chant. And look, I mean, as we know, is one of the big, you know, problems with the Rachel Maddow show right now is that, you know, she's been so focused and the show has been so focused on Russia, Russia, Russia and the Mueller report that, you know, we've missed. I mean, some of the reporting that's on that show over the years has been just absolutely phenomenal. And yes, I mean, for all the kind of Democratic Party, you know, kind of like alliances and things there, and from a very specific perspective, you know, from the kind of liberal left, I get all that stuff. But she and her show had done some great kind of explaining and digging into it. I actually saw that on the show a little bit last night. In a couple of her stories, when I was like, yes, you're kind of following and looking at what they're doing. And she was basically digging into some of the stuff that, you know, it's her watch what they do, not what they say stuff, and looking at what was happening with some environmental regulations in Arizona and some kind of newly exposed records or reporting basically is basically showing outright corruption by the Trump administration in kind of giving back to major donors for the campaign through kind of removal of regulations that allow them to build this town in Arizona where there's no water. I mean, it's like a whole bunch of stuff like that. But watch that show. It's really good. And that's, I think, where her show and Rachel Maddow, for that matter, is at her best. But in her coverage of, for example, the Trump rally, where, you know, that's got all the press this week, where all his supporters, he's talking about Ilhan Omar and is basically using, you know, again, he's been outright attacking her in the most racist ways possible. And Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Rashida Tlaib and Ayanna Pressley saying that they should go back to where they came from, you know, whatever. And her crowd or his crowd at that rally, when he brings up Ilhan Omar and he's about to deliver the line about things that anti-Semitic stuff she said about Israel, right? Whatever, which is bullshit to begin with, but whatever. We know the line, and the crowd starts chanting, "Send them back, send them back," which is echoing the tweets that he made earlier in the week, right? And what Rachel Maddow had said was that, you know, maybe this is a way of kind of distracting from maybe it's the 2020 campaign, but maybe it's about distracting them from what they really what they don't want to look at and looked at some of the scandals that are going on, you know, the legal scandals, things like this. Again, not that it's not important, but I think it misses the boat on what that just represents, what just happened in that at that rally. The fact that the crowd was chanting, "Send them back." Picking up on something that he said, and that he let them chant that for 13 seconds, right? And if you've watched the video and you hear the chants, from my perspective, I don't think he fully expected that. But when they chanted that and he listened to that and he was looking at that, in my mind, I could see the gears turning and his eyes lighting up and basically saying, "This is our campaign. We are going further racist. We are going further fascist. And that is what we're going to be doing for 2020. And, you know, and there's where it is. And then so I see, you know, what happens. Ilhan Omar, she goes back. She's going, you know, back to her district, goes back to her home district. And her constituents welcome her back. Welcome back, Ilhan. Welcome back, Ilhan. Right. And it was an amazing scene. A bunch of, you know, again, like Unite Here was there, a bunch of other labor organizers were there, a bunch of unions were there, in addition to other constituents came to welcome her back, right? And that's exactly what it's going to take. But anyways, and she basically pulls no punches and comes and says, "Look, yeah, I think Trump is fascist," right? And she knows where it goes. So she knows what has to happen. She knows that we have to fight this back. Meanwhile, the kind of liberal media, right, and when I mean liberal media, I'm not using it in the way that Fox News uses it. I'm talking about like MSNBC and folks like this who are commenting on this stuff. They basically they keep on rehearsing this question. And I've seen this everywhere, not even just liberal media, but I've seen it on CNN. I've seen it a range of other shows where there's this kind of like concerned hand-wringing of like, well, if Trump wants to do this, aren't we enabling him by responding to it? And it's like, that to me is a perfect example of what has frustrated me about academe, to be honest with you. Over the years, over the past several years, since about 2011 or so, I've grown increasingly impatient with this kind of abstract thinking. Right. This kind of we're going to play out kind of logical models of what could happen at the discursive level. You know, if he's saying this, then he's saying that that's what they want. And it's kind of like removed from the reality of what the hell's going on. This is not simply a messaging game. The fact that the crowd does this, the crowd says send them back, tells you that they are ready for violence. That this is burgeoning fascism, if not full-on fascism already, amidst the most corrupt administration, certainly in my lifetime, maybe in the history of the United States. Right? Trump puts Nixon to shame. And Nancy Pelosi and much of the establishment media seem more concerned about, well, if he does this and you respond to him, then you shouldn't do anything. And it reminds me of these conversations that I've had on our campus, right? Where, and just like every college campus, you get these freaking right-wing nut jobs who come onto campus, and they you know, they're these kind of like extreme right-wing evangelical kind of Christian conservatives who start yelling at, you know, women that they're sluts, and starts yelling at kind of people who are gay and lesbian and saying they're going to hell. And these are horrible, horrible things, right? And we all know the purpose of these organizations is to promote controversy and to stir controversy and to get into and to incite things. We also know that organizations like that, right, they hope that they're going to be kicked off the campus, or somebody is going to, you know, physically like assault them, and then they'll sue, right? And that's a part how they fund their organization. So all that stuff is true, right? But I was called in once, right, when there were students who were getting increasingly impatient with seeing this on campus, and they wanted to respond. And the administration's line at the time was just like walk on by, just ignore them, and they'll go away, right? Just ignore them. No big deal. Right. And because I had been doing a lot of work with student activists at the time, I got called in from it was the dean of students at that time and a couple faculty members. And they basically wanted me to encourage students to just walk on by, to just ignore them. That's the best thing that we can do, is just ignore them. And they used almost the exact same logic that Nancy Pelosi and some of the kind of establishment media and kind of Democratic leadership are using. So, well, you know, if we acknowledge what he's saying, we're actually kind of part of the problem, right? Even if it is to resist, right? That's the kind of logic that is. And when I was being asked to do that, I got so freaking mad, I can't even tell you. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. You're telling me they're allowed their free speech rights, right? Which is true, right? I mean, they're on a college campus, right? Public college campus, free speech rights. So they're entitled to free speech. But you're telling me that free speech is basically for them only, and then for us, we have to shut our mouths. I am not going to go tell students to shut their mouths, right? The question is, what strategies do we use to respond, right? I have always looked at moments like that as organizing moments. Right. The point is not to convince the nut jobs that to change their ways. The point is to use that as an opportunity to organize horizontally, to build solidarity, to find ways of saying we will not stand for this in our communities. And that does not necessarily mean getting police to come in and arrest them and take them off campus. There are so many different ways of doing this, and there's been amazing creative responses to this from people who are saying, you get to use your free speech, right? Guess what? I get to use mine too, right? And you don't have to like it, but I get to use mine too. And we're going to organize, and we're going to put an end to you people, right? I mean that in a metaphorical sense. And that's the same deal here. Now, the squad, quote unquote, right? Ilhan Omar, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, Ayanna Pressley, and all the kind of like, you know, emergent and insurgent Democrats kind of working in solidarity with them. That whole constituent, they get that. You do not let that stand, right? Ignoring the problem has never solved the problem, ever. And it will not now. They did that with Trump. Just ignore it. Aha, laugh him off, blah, blah. What happened? Now he's the president of the United States. Don't encourage him. Don't talk, blah, blah, blah. Now he's the president of the United States. We saw this with white nationalists and white supremacists, right? And we got a lot of flack for this, Sean in particular, right, for reporting on white supremacists, right, and the kind of the actions that were going on. They said, no, if you report on them, you're emboldening them. You're encouraging them. You're actually helping them. You got to be freaking kidding me. These are people who do not recognize the fundamental norms and institutions of our society are right now under attack and are crumbling. If you are on top of a crumbling infrastructure, you either got to fix the freaking infrastructure or you got to get the hell out. Right? Get out of the building and let it crash and rebuild. Right? I mean, that, there's no other option. And frankly, the letting it crash and rebuild stuff, we saw what that did in the early 20th century. Right? You don't appease fascists. Period. Haven't we learned that? You don't just ignore them and act politely and think that that is going to kind of solve the problem. It is not. I had a piece published recently in a book. And one of the things I was so frustrated, this is I was talking about, you know, this is, I was actually talking a lot about what was going on in the Obama administration and what the insurgent right, but also, you know, and kind of led up to the beginning of the Trump administration. But one of the things I said, you know, the Democratic Party, especially in their leadership, and many, frankly, progressives and liberals that I work with, right, they have the same logic. Well, we have to get, you know, with this, act politely again and just kind of like just uphold this and not realizing that the whole freaking infrastructure is crumbling. And I said, it's like showing up to a knife fight or a gunfight, not with a knife, but with thank you cards, and say we're going to kill them with kindness. That is a logic of Hallmark, not of political movements, folks. So anyways. So, you know, thank God right now, for the squad, right? Thank God for Ilhan Omar, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, Ayanna Pressley, and all those progressives that have been kind of like voices in the wilderness in Congress forever. Thank God for the DSA. Thank God for Indivisible. Thank God for the Women's March. Thank God for the people who have been like on the front lines of Black Lives Matter, right? Thank God for the movements, for the political movements, for the grassroots movements, because they are the only thing that is saving us at this point. We have an incompetent Democratic Party leadership who does not understand what social struggle and political struggle means, and they certainly don't appear equipped to resist kind of growing fascism. So we shall see. We shall see. But, you know, we're going to see a little bit more of this coming up. The CNN just announced last night that they did like a lottery style drawing. I don't know if people watched it. I was like freaking geeky enough to actually watch the drawings. You know, Biden, once again, is spared being on the same stage with Elizabeth Warren, as I said, kind of at the onset. And let me pull this up right here. So I'll give you the lineup if you haven't seen already. So on Tuesday, July 30th. It's going to be Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Pete Buttigieg, right? Beto O'Rourke, Amy Klobuchar, Marianne Williamson, John Delaney, Hickenlooper, former governor, Colorado governor Hickenlooper, Ohio's Tim Ryan, and Montana governor makes it in this time, Steve Bullock, right? So there you go. Night number two, it's Biden, Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, Julian Castro, Andrew Yang, Jay Inslee, Tulsi Gabbard, Kirsten Gillibrand, Bill de Blasio, and Senator Michael Bennett from Colorado. So there you have it. That's who we're going to get. I've got mixed feelings about this. I really, really want to see Biden on the stage with Elizabeth Warren, part because that's the conversation that has to happen when it comes to Biden, because they have such a long history and Biden's been such a scumbag to her, attempting to use her as cultural capital for his own game, just like he tried to do in this campaign. But anyways, so we'll see what happens in this two-night thing. Frankly, I'm really hoping that this is going to be the last of the two-night debates, that this is going to put basically the nail in the coffin a lot of people's presidential campaigns, so basically they can get on with whatever kind of grift that they're going to go on, whether it's books or whatever it might be, that they can go do that stuff. I think we need everybody on the same stage now. My consolation for this is that, look, there, frankly, a lot of people are still not paying attention. This is going to start to spark some of that attention, but We don't need to see it all on the same stage. My concern, of course, is that with this reporting, like I mentioned about the Bernie Sanders campaign, the labor issues in that campaign, what we're going to start to see is we're going to start to see this in establishment press. And we'll probably see it in some of the questioning, is that the focus is going to be on attempting to pit Sanders and Warren against one another. And to do that to the detriment of both their campaigns, that's what I think is probably lining up. They want to see that fight because they love it when progressives go after each other and then leave the terrain open for all the moderates. So, but we'll see. Frankly, I think, you know, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren have a long enough relationship and have worked together closely enough that I am hoping that they're going to go in there and think about, look, for the purposes right now, we are a team. We are about establishing the message, not just about our particular campaign. Right. That's what I'm hoping to see. And hoping that's going to be Warren and Sanders laying out the progressive argument on the left and the rest of them trying to kind of like claim that, you know, that we need to be friends with Republicans. That's what I'm hoping that's going to pay off to be. The Biden one. Because again, all the attention is going to be on Harris. It's going to be interesting to see what Cory Booker does, because Cory Booker, if you remember from the first night, the first round of the debates, Cory Booker basically took one step to the left, kind of putting and planting himself in the camp with Sanders and Warren a little bit closer. Julian Castro is going to be interesting to see him with Biden. We'll see what goes on. I think, frankly, Bill de Blasio, I'm just hoping he continues to do what he did in the first round, is that he is going to be the progressive stick in that particular debate. And I think that it's going to irritate Biden. I think that we can expect Bill de Blasio to go after Biden. That would be my bet. Maybe not directly, but in terms of his policies and the wing of the party that he represents. And that is going to force Biden to have to try to kind of like argue from his position, and which is going to think it's people are going to see how hollow that is. But we'll see. So that's debates that are kind of keyed up, you know, getting ready for that. We'll see what happens. Yeah. So that's kind of what where we are with presidential politics. One of the things that I would encourage everybody to do is that the one voice, at least within the liberal media on MSNBC, Chris Hayes, his show has been increasingly impatient with this Democratic kind of slow walk stuff that's going on. And the fact that, you know, he's watching, you know, as we all are, seeing the institutions crumble and fascism being rekindled. And he's getting pissed off at some of the Democrats, I think, for kind of pretending that that's not really what's going on. His kind of opening monologue last night was fantastic. I would encourage you to all check it out. I was hoping to be able to kind of read a little bit from the transcript, but they don't have the transcript posted yet. But it was excellent, and it really captures some of my own frustrations. When Jerry Nadler was also on the show last night on Chris Hayes' show, and Hayes basically said, "Do you realize what's going on here?" And Nadler is like, "Well, yes, of course. Hey, we got to do this. We have no choice," which just drives me nuts. What drove me nuts on both of those shows, though, Chris Hayes and Rachel Maddow last night, was that with all their guests coming on, Maddow had Amy Klobuchar and, like, you know, tried not to nod off. But, you know, Maddow refused to bring up, you know, the question of impeachment, as, you know, Hayes didn't actually kind of grill him on impeachment. So, you know, again, these are the limits. But still, it was a really good, I think, moment. The other thing I want to kind of give some shout outs to is, like, Netroots is something that Sean and I went to Providence, the Netroots Nation in Providence, 6 years ago, something like 7 years ago, maybe. And it was amazing, right? It was an amazing experience, and it was lively, and it was full of kind of passion. It was engaged. It was great. And I haven't been back since. I wanted to go a couple times, but it's just timing and cost and things like this. And so this time was first time with back. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, Rick actually said this to me, he said, you go to CPAC, Rick Smith says, you go to CPAC, right? That is the conservative political action conference, right? You go to CPAC and there's tons of energy. A lot of it is crazy energy, right? But there are tons of energy. People are smiling. They're laughing. They're kind of engaged. They're kind of like, you know, the mood is upbeat, right? And the mood is engaged, right? And so as horrendous as some of most of the politics of CPAC is, these are engaged people, right? And Netroots is kind of one of the few spaces on the left that's kind of like that, you know. And I think, you know, Netroots got established. It used to be the Daily Coast, the annual Coast. But, coming out of, you know, the blogosphere in the kind of early 2000s, when there was this kind of push against the Bush administration, the Iraq War and all this kind of stuff. And there was a passion when we were in Providence. Right, that you saw everywhere you went. I didn't see that in Philadelphia. Now, I was only there for one day. Okay, so get it with a grain of salt. But I had this feel. I kept on having this nagging feeling that I'm at like another academic conference. These are a bunch of professionals. Most people that wanted to come up and talk to me, you know, and I was just floating around talking to people. I wasn't set up at a table or anything like that. But I'd be approached by random people who were looking at me to sell different technology. To how to help your political campaign. There's a lot of well-dressed kind of like hipster kind of dress folks there, hawking stuff. And it didn't feel passionate. Now I understand that Saturday there was more of that because you had the presidential forum. There's a lot more people that were coming out and things like this, which is good. There were some amazing things that happened in terms of like organizing the community, mobilizing activists to show up for different actions for like a Hahnemann Hospital, for example, in Philadelphia. Those were excellent. But I had this nagging feeling that Netroots represents a moment in time that is past, right? It had a meaning to, let's say, like my generation, who, you know, Gen Xers who had been frustrated for the longest time where there hadn't been a lot of these mass movements or so on, and were finally fed up, right? And finally had the means, and as a technological means of the blogosphere and things like this, to actually break into and kind of like define a different set of politics on the left, like progressives, right? Was what really emerged in the early days of the Netroots and the blogosphere and so on. And that meant a lot. But, I was listening to – I haven't listened to Chapo Trap House in a while just for random reasons. I mean, not because I'm like, I don't like them anymore. But I hadn't listened to them in a while, and they were at Netroots. And they gave a pretty blistering summary of what happened at Netroots. And I would really encourage people, especially those folks who are kind of, you know, I don't know, at Netroots for that matter, to give them a listen. Now, again, I don't agree with absolutely everything that they had to say, but I think this idea – about that, what they saw at Netroots is not the center of where the energy is in the party right now, or on the left rather. That is more in DSA. That is more that is happening in the kind of on the activists on the left. And that was not the center of gravity at Netroots this year. And that was just interesting, and it made me feel like, okay, we need to. Like find these other spaces, like maybe say, you know, okay, we had this, it was a good thing. It's time to move on. It's time to get in with the DSA folks. It's time to build out the kind of the left within, in a more sustained way, more than we've ever had, at least in my lifetime. So, something to think about. So today, just to kind of wind things up today is, like I said, this is the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 mission. And I am always and continually just in awe of that. It's absolutely amazing when watching, when I can, different clips of that. I have yet to watch the new Apollo 11, the movie that had come out, the one that has no narrator. It's a documentary. It's just original footage. I'm hoping to get to that this weekend, maybe to see that. But it's really a momentous time. And, you know, if I had more time today to really get into it, we are really on the precipice of the next space race. It is as much a reflection of where our political and economic world is right now as anything else. the fact that billionaires are the ones who are leading it, the fact that it is being premised on kind of basically neoliberal, libertarian ideals, that the people that are most invested in this happen to be on the right wing, that it is coupled with massive movements to privatize yet another sector of the public, which are things like NASA and the whole kind of like, you know, intellectual infrastructure and scientific infrastructure that is that it's bound up in, and turn it over to science for profit. We saw that as kind of like, you know, the Trump administration is basically destroying the EPA, destroying the United States Department of Agriculture, you know, the Department of the Interior, by basically telling all these scientists, either you're going to move to Kansas City in the case of the Department of Agriculture, or you're going to move to, what is it, Colorado, I guess, for the Department of the Interior, or, you know, you either move by in 2 weeks or you're going to lose your job. And, yep. Most of those scientists are bailing. And, you know, now they're going to be at the position where you have all these scientists that are out there, and they're going to have to look for work. And with a diminished public sector, they're going to have to decide to go work for some private industries. And then all that science is no longer public. All that science is now proprietary. Right? It's astonishing what's going on. This is just through the window of the space stuff. I mean, it's amazing. And you put that in comparison to what happened 50 years ago, well, more than 50 years ago, in the lead up to the Apollo 11 mission to the moon. And that was as reflective of our politics, our culture, economics, than any other time. And yes, it was all embedded in the Cold War and all that kind of stuff, which is only just kind of underscores my point. Good news in all this, too, as well, you know, in addition to tomorrow being the 50th anniversary of the landing on the moon, and it's going to be all over the news and all over the, you know, radio and podcasts and everything like this, is that I was really psyched to see that LEGO released the lunar module, the lunar lander. And yes, I got a copy of it, I got a set, and we're going to build it relatively soon, maybe this weekend, since it's freaking going to be a heat index of around 110, maybe 115 in some places, maybe even 120 if you're down in the city. So we've got to be safe, that's for sure. Climate change is with us to stay, folks. Yeah, I'm not going to even get into that, because that's a whole other hole that I don't feel like going in right now, because I want at least a little bit of goodness. Anyways. Last thing today, that just give a little beer news. Free Will will be at the Bluegrass and Blueberries Festival at Peddler's Village Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. That should be kind of – it's always a good event. They have like organic blueberries from the area, all sorts of vendors that kind of like supporting that festival. And Free Will, of course, it has its own tap room there at Peddler's Village. It's a really great tap room. If you haven't been there, check it out. Just a really cool place. But they have two releases this weekend, and I mentioned this at the top of the show. Their strawberry mash was absolutely freaking amazing. I absolutely loved it. That was released a few weeks back. So they've got a double release tomorrow, which is a blueberry mash and a mango mash, which I kind of like laid out a little bit there. I can't wait to get those. 850 pounds of blueberries or mangoes, depending on which mash you're going to get. Both will be there tomorrow. Both will come in at 7.5 ABV, and both promise to be freaking amazing. I'm wondering, I have to say, I'm curious about the mango mash, if that's going to end up being too sweet, but we'll see. The blueberry mash seems like right in that vein. And what was great about the strawberry one is that, yeah, the strawberry mash, you had that sweetness, absolutely, but you had the tartness of the strawberries came through so nicely too as well. That's of course, you know, helped with the sour too as well. So anyways, great stuff. So check that out. I hope that Sean will be back next week, if we can make our schedules work. In the meantime, you know, I appreciate everybody being patient with us, because I know that, you know, you wonder, like, what the hell just happened? Why is it that there's no show this week? And, you know, my best intentions are to kind of do a little short quip, like let everybody know where everything's going to go on. But it's just been crazy. So hopefully back from vacation, that I could start to get my feet on the ground once again. as we approach the – well, we're at the mid-July, and we're approaching the end of July, and it's driving me crazy. I can't believe the summer's going so fast. But here's looking forward, everybody. So we remind you that if you can, become a member of Raging Chicken Press. Just go to patreon.com/rcpress. You become a member for as little as $5 a month. That is what sustains us. That is what can help us build us out. And that is really the make or break of whether or not progressive media is worth it. Right? It depends on you. There is all, you know, I've said for a while to a lot of folks around, you know, there's only so long you can do this. And just kind of trying to piece together every little last thing. And you guys start, you know, you end up questioning, you know, is it worth the effort if no one really gives a shit? Right. But I know, look, you know, we've got our core members, ones that have been with us since the beginning. Ones like Seth, for example, who's been one of our very first members. He just kind of moved into the Patreon, you know, came in once again at $25 a month is absolutely amazing. So we have some of our oldest members who are there, and we have our Patreon members who have joined, and we know that they know what I know, right? That you don't get progressive media if you don't support it. They know that. Look, $5 a month, right? That can buy me a beer, right? So I'm basically saying a beer a month, right? To go to support progressive media, I a Starbucks venti latte, whatever. A month. That's what we're talking about here. And, you know, we've made a decision that this is how we want to run things. We don't want to try to go out and spend all this time recruiting ads and everything like this. We want it to be a membership-based thing, so we're not beholden to anybody except you. Right? So join the members who have been there since the beginning. Join the members who recently joined. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress today. All right, everybody. Thanks for sticking with us. Try to stay cool, stay safe. And we'll see you next week. See ya!